The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Now, as you've heard, it's been a very dramatic day. We're hearing reports that the newly installed Chancellor, Nadeem Zakari, is expected to meet Boris Johnson this evening as part of a group of cabinet ministers who will ask him to resign. So there is going to be a group of, I don't know whether it's white coats or grey coats, but politicians of seniority in Britain are going to go to Boris Johnson later on and ask him to resign. We'll see if that's borne out by subsequent events. But we sent our reporter Elaine Smith to go to the streets of Cork this afternoon, where she's been asking Irish people how they feel about our politicians and how they contrast with what they see over in the UK.
I think he has a lot of problems in England. I can see he won't resign. He's so stubborn. But I think the sooner he's ousted, the better. Better for everyone. Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland and the EU and Britain even. Because the man is just a liar. He's hanging by a thread at the moment. And I just hope that thread breaks in the morning and he's gone.
Maybe it's time for a change. He doesn't seem to be very professional. And I think maybe that it's time for him to go and someone else to come in and show him how it's done.
What are your thoughts on our own government compared to Boris?
They've definitely handled things better than he has. They might be the best, but at least they're a bit more professional.
I think people of Britain have a lot to think about. He's given them a lot to think about. I'm not sure he's been entirely honest with people. But I think a lot of people know that anyway and they accept him as he is flawed. But, you know, people accept someone who's flawed, you know. That's why I think people are willing to go along with him.
Do you think his time is up?
It's beginning to look that way.
Would not be a fan of the man at all. Don't think he should have ever been in power. Just lying, cheating, you know. Not a political man at all, you know. So that would be basically my polite way of saying what I think of Boris Johnson. He makes everybody look a lot better, and I think actually the Irish government are getting away with a lot because of what's going on over in England at the minute with Boris Johnson, and I think they've kind of got an escape card at the minute.
When I first came across him ever, I thought that he was the fella from Little Britain. I didn't know he was political at all, so I think that he still portrays that image to me. They're grasping at straws trying to keep him.
And how does it make for you viewing the demise of Boris Johnson, knowing that he's not your Prime Minister or Taoiseach?
Well, I mean, a little bit of a relief he's not ours.
I think it's time for him to go.
Do you think it's well overdue?
Definitely. It is easy to watch the car crash. I think our own politicians are doing good.
There you go. That's the new election slogan for the next election. We're not Boris Johnson. Vote us number one for our government here. The people of Cork giving their unvarnished, salty opinions on Boris Johnson. James O'Brien, LBC broadcaster, what do you think of our friends from Cork?
I think the streets of Cork have got more insightful and honest commentators than most of the British media, which will wake up tomorrow morning in large part and start pretending that they don't bear responsibility for inflicting this clown on the entire country. Because I do think time is up for him now.
Well, I had your colleague Sheila Fogarty on with us yesterday about this time, in or about at least, and she said he's toast. I said, well, hang on a second, his demise has been declared multiple times and he keeps bouncing back. Are you definitive? Are you calling it, as they say, this time around?
Well, you're not wrong, Emmett, but no, I mean, I don't say 52-48, the infernal ratio that's sort of cast a dark shadow over British politics since 2016. I'm more than 52% certain. The problem is that he is unique, infernally unique, and he will never do anything for the good of the party or indeed the good of the country. He never has, and he's unlikely to start now. So precedent is no guide with Boris Johnson. He would have gone years ago. He never would have got into Downing Street if he'd followed the sort of what his teacher at Eton called the network of obligation that binds us all. He's rejected it since he was a teenager, and so you can never say with absolute certainty. But I think like a cornered rat being at its most dangerous, the only path out of this now, especially with the delegation off to tell him to walk the plank, it would be calling a snap general election. And I just can't quite imagine him
being that desperate. Let's focus in on the unique role of your new chancellor, Chancellor Zahawi. I mean, he gets the job. Apparently it's the job nobody wants, but he seems to take on the burdens of state on his shoulders. He then gets it, and now, if you believe these reports, he's going to go up the stairs and say, Boris, you've got to go now that I've got my hands on the chancellorship, possibly something even further. I mean, has Boris Johnson, not necessarily has been demise here, but he's been outmaneuvered right at the end, it seems.
Yes, it's possible. I mean, it casts Zahawi's decision yesterday as being marginally less craven and desperate than it looked. this morning, although this morning on breakfast television, he was asked specifically about whether he believed that Boris Johnson tells the truth at all times. And he said yes. So, you know, the political capital he's sacrificed even by lashing himself to a burning bandwagon is going to be considerable. But remember that events have moved on since yesterday when you spoke to Sheila. So when Zahawi accepted the job, he probably didn't know that there'd be 25 ministerial resignations in total. Well, I say 25. You had me on hold for a couple of minutes. It could have gone up.
I'm looking at 35. Yeah, I'll keep you posted.
he wouldn't have known that events were going to gather pace quite that quickly. You know, no more cabinet ministers followed Sunak and Sajid Javid out of the door. So he probably wasn't foreseeing being involved in the dispatch delegation tonight, but given the way events have transpired, I don't really think he could say no. I mean,
now obviously people are very excited, James, here, and I don't need to tell you why. I know you've covered the Ireland story a lot on your programme. People are very excited here at the idea of getting another political personality in there. Now, I know we can't look too far ahead. The man is still in office. You know, he may last another few days. It's not out of the range of possibilities. But if we look at some of the runners and riders, and I'm not going to ask you to get into individuals or anything, but do you think the policies that we all know, Brexit, the Rwanda stuff, do you see those changing? Or do you think, you know, all that's going to change here is we won't have a tousled-haired blonde guy, you know, making all these crazy pronouncements and so on. But the policies probably wouldn't change a whole lot. And I don't want to rain in anyone's parade here. But do you think the packaging may change, but the core bit on the substance behind it, which has dragged the Tory party into, you know, a rightward direction for several years, do you think that actually will change?
It's a very astute question. Somebody said on Twitter today that trying to choose the next Conservative leader is like trying to decide what lavatory to use at the Glastonbury Festival. They're all pretty,
pretty
grim. Exactly that. And that's underpinned, I think, by the point that you make. The whole administration is built on Brexit. You know, Theresa May's administration was, although she could never say it out loud, was dedicated to trying to mitigate the damage that she understood Brexit was going to do to the United Kingdom. But this administration is built still on the pretense or the lie or whatever you prefer that it could prove in any way to be a good idea. And I don't think that the Conservative Party or the electorate yet is quite ready to concede that it's catastrophic and was always going to be catastrophic. So you're going to have, I think, very little change to the stalemate in Northern Ireland. I think Geoffrey Donaldson he was given some made up job as a trade envoy. A DUP man is still one of the few not to have resigned. I can't see a return to power sharing in the Stormont anytime soon. So whoever takes over is going to have to deal with that problem. And you can only deal with the meeting of the Belfast Agreement with regulatory alignment with the requirements of single market membership. You can only deal with it in the way that Boris Johnson promised he would never deal with it and then subsequently dealt with it with the border in the Irish Sea. So that overweens it.
Yeah.
You might see a stepping back from some of the more toxic culture war positions. The Rwandan refugee scheme, with a very real chance, of course, of being ruled illegal by our own courts, never mind the European Court on Human Rights. So that decision may be taken out of their hands. But it's hard to imagine anyone being quite as cynical as Johnson.
Sure.
It's not hard to imagine a leader who is perhaps as unpleasant as Priti Patel. I mean, she might even throw her own hat into the ring.
And the guffaw moment, in the sense of Mr. Pincher being the piece that seemingly has brought him down. It wasn't the peregrination of Parliament. It wasn't Partygate. It wasn't Owen Paterson. No. Do you think it was just accumulation, or do you think there's something about this particular Pincher episode that kind of, and I know it's just, I have to say that with a straight face, but just bear with me. Do you think it was this particular episode, or was it just, no, this is just, it just, the weight of the stuff over several months just became too much?
I think it's both. I think that we had two by-elections a couple of weeks ago, one of which saw the largest ever collapse in the majority for a sitting party, for the party that had won last time round. When they lost Tiverton and Honiton down in Devon, that would have focused an awful lot of attention. And then don't forget, we had the vote of confidence, it was a nightmare again from any other prime minister's point of view. It was a nightmare, but Boris Johnson and his cheerleaders tried to paint it as a resounding victory. But a lot of people who didn't vote against him then would have been wondering what's going to happen next. Is there going to be another scandal? And I think perhaps the speed with which this scandal has followed upon that vote of confidence, rather than necessarily the nature of the scandal, I think that is probably the clincher. But yesterday's letter from Simon MacDonald, the former permanent secretary in the Foreign Office, was unprecedented. There's been so much sewage sort of swishing over British politics now for so long that it's easy to miss the significance of certain situations.
Yeah,
it's easy to miss the awfulness of Johnson's latest.
And you're also, you're constantly reminded of how out of touch, like this is a small little corner of the political landscape. People swilling wine or champagne in the Carlton Club, right? Like its connection to mainstream Britain is minimal. I mean, these people that you see being interviewed constantly, they don't look nor sound like most British people. Now, maybe that's always been the way, but you get a sense that this is a small minority of a minority of a minority who are battling it out. Meanwhile, the British public, which is so much more multi-ethnic, younger, less privately schooled, you know, it's sort of hard to connect the two pieces together.
I think it's always been like that. We're a curiously deferential people, much more so than in Ireland. You know, we tug our forelocks and doff our caps at people who are supremely undeserving of respect, never mind deference. There can't be many countries in the world where Jacob Rees-Mogg could rise to a position of prominence despite being as thick as mince. But, you know, that's where we are. That's how the English, in a sense, have always been. But I think that, you know, the speed with which it fell apart, the Thursday or Friday claiming that he'd not had any knowledge at all of these allegations, moving to specific allegations, moving to, well, he did know about them, but they weren't substantiated, moving to, well, they were substantiated, moving yesterday to, I was told about it, but I forgot. And ministers actually touring studios to tell the public things that the Downing Street office that's briefed them knew were not true. I mean, these are moments. So there have been a few in Johnson's administration where ministers on the car back from the television studio would have turned on the radio to hear Downing Street disowning the lies that they've just been telling on behalf of Downing Street. But just a sense of the planets aligning on this one, the speed with which it followed the confidence vote, the speed with which it followed the by-elections, the egregiousness and the transparency of the lies and the exposure of the people that were defending them. And then this letter, this unprecedented letter from a former number one civil servant in the Foreign Office calling Downing Street liars.
Now, like, I'm going to stretch things here a bit, so bear with me.
Go on.
But I mean, in terms of, you often hear this phrase, the nature of his departure summoned the person up, right? And I'm going to stretch back to the Trump situation, the Capitol Hill riots, totally different countries, totally different
of
time.
Course.
But does the nature of Boris Johnson's departure, if it is what it is, and we're going that direction, it would seem from reports, does the nature of it sort of sum him up in the sort of the kicking and screaming analogy? You know, have you no shame? You know, you're left with no friends in your quarter. I mean, does that say something about him personally, that he's clinging on to the extent, clinging on probably a lot more than even Margaret Thatcher did at the time? I mean, he's kind of the king of cling here. I mean, do you think it sums up something about his character in particular?
Absolutely it does. And it's overweening self-interest. He wakes up every morning with only one concern and only one priority, and that is Boris Johnson. So what is best for him in his mind is clinging on to power, not walking. Tradition has it that the chief whip or a delegation like the ones Zahawi is in go in to see him at times like this with a glass of whiskey and a metaphorical revolver, and then, you know, they call upon him to do what's right for Queen and country. But Johnson would drink the whiskey and shoot the delegation, I think. That is pretty much the measure of the man. And what's weird, to be honest with you, Emma, is the small number of us in the British media who have been describing and predicting every step of this horrible, horrible business pretty much since it started, are now witnessing the whole crowd turn
well,
around and go, oh yes, oh well, yes, the Emperor's naked after all.
I think we should measure out our lives in MP resignations. We're now up to 36 while you're speaking to me. So just stay on another few minutes, we'll get it up to 40. by the way, I'm getting a text in saying, always good to hear James on your show. That's great insight and correct all along on Boris. So you have your fan base here, James, and it's not just because of your surname. Although that probably plays some part in it. We tend to have...
Helps.
Finally, before I let you go, because we're a bit tight on time, I mean, just give me your crystal ball gazing moment. Are we talking this evening, or do you feel there's more days in this? Is he going to be literally have to be evicted physically, the furniture removal men arriving into Downing Street? Just give us your own possible outcome here.
I think lunchtime tomorrow at the latest, quite possibly tonight. The 1922 committee of backbenchers are in the process of talking about possible rule changes. I'll tell you what I think will happen. I think that the head of the 1922 committee, Sir Graham Brady, will go to him. I forget exactly what the number is, but if you've got more than half of the Parliamentary Conservative Party have submitted letters of no confidence, you don't need a vote. If Brady goes to him and say, we've now got more letters than you can possibly win votes, then it's over.
Yeah,
and that could happen. That could happen in the next few hours, or it could happen tomorrow morning.
Okay. Well, listen, we'll give you the window until lunchtime tomorrow. Then we're going to start ringing LBC studios and saying, Mr. O'Brien, please.
I got it wrong.
Listen, thanks very much for joining us, James O'Brien, a well-known LBC broadcaster. Lots of Irish listeners listen to his show and know him well. And he has been, as he said, chronicling the incredible ups and downs of the Johnson premiership. I was going to say presidency, not quite at that stage yet. Coming up after the break, we'll be looking at, will people be paying rent into their old age?
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.